make him lose control for just a second, falling to his knees. And in that second, Vasher stood, ripping the dagger free from the corpse beside him, then slashed it through Denth's throat. The mercenary fell back, eyes wide, neck bleeding. He shook amidst the pleasure of gaining new breaths, even as his life flowed from him. "Nobody ever expects it," Vasher whispered, stepping forward. "Breath is worth a fortune. To put it into someone, then kill them, is to lose more wealth than most men will ever know. They never expect it." Denth shook, bleeding, and lost control. His hair suddenly bled to deep black, then blonde, then an angry red. Finally, the hair turned white with terror and stayed there. He stopped moving, life fading away, new breaths and old, both vanishing. "You wanted to know how I killed Arsteel," Vasher said, spitting blood to the side. "Well, now you do." Blue Fingers picked up a knife. "The least I can do," he decided, "is to kill you myself, rather than letting the lifeless do it. I promise it will be quick. We will make it look like a pagan ritual afterward, sparing you the need to die in a painful way." He turned to her lifeless captors. "Tie her to the altar." Ciri struggled against the lifeless, holding her by the shoulders. But it was useless. They were terribly strong, and her hands were tied together. "Blue Fingers," she snapped, holding his eyes. "I will not die tied to some rock like a useless maid from one of the stories. You want me dead? Then have the decency to let me die standing up." Blue Fingers hesitated, but the authority in her voice actually seemed to make him cringe. He raised a hand, stopping the lifeless as they pulled her to the altar. "Very well," he said. "Hold her tightly." "You realize the wonderful opportunity you waste by killing me," she said as he approached. "The wife of the God King would make a wonderful hostage. You are a fool to kill me and—" He ignored her this time, taking the knife, placing it against her chest, picking his spot. She started to feel numb. She was going to die. She was actually going to die. And the war would start. "Please," she whispered. He looked at her, hesitated, then grew grim and drew back the dagger. The building began to shake. Blue Fingers looked to the side in alarm, glancing toward several of his scribes. They shook their heads in confusion.
"Earthquake?"
one asked. The floor began to turn white. The color moved like a wave of sunlight crossing the land as the sun rose above the mountains. The walls, the ceiling, the floor, all of the black stone faded. The priests stepped away from it, looking frightened, one hopping onto a rug to keep from touching the strange white stones. Blue Fingers looked at her, confused. The ground continued to tremble, but he raised his blade anyway, held in fingers that had been stained repeatedly by ink. And, strangely, Ciri saw the whites of his eyes bend and release a rainbow of colors. The entire room burst with color, the white stones fuzzing and splitting like light through a prism. The doors to the room exploded. A twisting mass of colorful cloth shot through it, like the countless tentacles of an enraged sea leviathan. They churned and curled, and Ciri recognized tapestries, carpets, and long lengths of silk from the palace decorations. Awakened cloth slapped aside lifeless, curling around them, tossing them into the air. Priests cried out as they were snatched up, and a long, thin length of violet cloth snapped forward and wrapped around Bluefinger's arm. The surging mass undulated, churning, and Ciri could finally see a figure walking in the middle of it. A man of epic proportions. Black of hair, pale of face, youthful in appearance, but of great age. Bluefinger struggled to ram his knife into Ciri's chest, but the God King raised a hand.
"You will stop,"
Sesebron said, in a clear voice. Bluefingers froze, looking toward the God King in amazement. The dagger slipped from his stunned fingers as an awakened carpet twisted around him, pulling him away from Ciri. Ciri stood, dumbfounded. Sesebron's cloths lifted him up and over beside her, and a pair of small silken handkerchiefs reached forward, sliding around the ropes binding her hands, untying them with ease. Freed, she grabbed him and let him lift her into his arms, weeping. Chapter 58. The closet door opened, letting in lantern light. Vivenna looked up, gagged and bound, at Vasher's silhouette. He dragged Nightblood behind him, covered, as usual, by his silver sheath. Looking very tired, Vasher knelt and undid her gag. "About time," she noted. He smiled wanly.
"I don't have any breath remaining," he said quietly. "It was very hard to locate you."
"Where did it all go?" she asked as he undid the ropes on her hands.
"Nightblood devoured most of it."
"I don't believe him," Nightblood said happily. "I can't really remember what happened, but we did slay a lot of evil."
"You drew him?" Vivenna asked as Vasher untied her feet. Vasher nodded. Vivenna rubbed her hands. "Denth?"
"Dead," Vasher said. "No sign of Tonk Fa or the woman Jules. I think they took their money and fled."
"So it's over." Vasher nodded, sliding down to seat himself, resting his head against the wall.
"And we lost."
She frowned, grimacing at the pain of her wounded shoulder. "What do you mean?"
"Denth was being employed by some of the Pankal scribes in the palace," Vasher said. "They wanted to start a war between Idris and Halandrin, in the hope that it would weaken both kingdoms and let Pankal gain independence."
"So? Denth is dead now."
"So are the scribes who had the command phrases for the lifeless armies,"
Vasher said.
"And they already dispatched the troops. The lifeless left the city over an hour ago, charging for Idris."
Vivenna fell silent.
"All of this fighting, everything with Denth, that was secondary,"
Vasher said, knocking his head back against the wall.
"It distracted us. I couldn't get to the lifeless in time. The war has begun. There's no way to stop it."
Sesebron led Ciri down into the depths of the palace. Ciri walked beside him, carefully cradled in his arm, 100 twisting lengths of cloth spinning around them. Even with that many things awakened, he still had enough breath to make every color they passed glow brightly. Of course, that didn't work for many of the stones they passed. Though large chunks of the building were still black, at least half of it had been turned white. Not just the gray of normal awakening, They had been made bone white. And becoming that white, they now reacted to his incredible biochroma, splitting back into colors. Like a circle, somehow, she thought. Colorful, then white, then back to color. He led her into a particular chamber, and she saw what he'd told her to expect. Scribes crushed by the carpets that he'd awakened, bars ripped from their mountings, walls broken down. A ribbon shot from Sosebron, turning over a body so that she wouldn't have to see its wound. She wasn't paying much attention. In the midst of the rubble were a pair of corpses. One was Blushweaver, bloody and red, face down. The other was Lightsong, his entire body drained of color, as if he were a lifeless. His eyes were closed, and he seemed to sleep, as if at peace. A man sat next to him, Lightsong's high priest, holding the god's head in his lap. The priest looked up. He smiled, though she could see tears in his eyes. I don't understand, she said, looking at Sosebron.
Lightsong gave his life to heal me, the God King said. He somehow knew that my tongue had been removed. The returned can heal one person, the priest said, looking down at his god. It's their duty to decide who and when. They come back for this purpose, some say, to give life to one person who needs it. I never knew him, Sosebron said.
He was a very good person, Ciri said.
I realize that, though I never spoke to him. Somehow he was noble enough to die so that I might live.
The priest smiled down.
The amazing thing is, he said, Lightsong did that twice.
He told me that I couldn't depend on him in the end, Ciri thought, smiling slightly, though sorrowful at the same time. I guess he lied about that. How very like him.
Come, Sosebron said. We must gather what is left of my priests. We have to find a way to stop our armies from destroying your people.
There has to be a way, Vasher, Vivenna said. She knelt next to him. He tried to push down his rage, his anger at himself. He'd come to the city to stop a war. Once again, he'd been too late.
40,000 lifeless, he said, pounding his fist against the floor. I can't stop that many, not even with night blood and the breaths of every person in the city. Even if I could somehow keep up with their marching, one would eventually get in a lucky strike and kill me.
There has to be a way, Vivenna said.
Has to be a way. I thought the same thing before, he said, putting his head in his hands. I wanted to stop it, but by the time I realized what was happening, it had gone too far. It had taken on a life of its own.
What are you talking about?
The Many War,
Vasher whispered. Silence. Who are you? He kept his eyes closed.
They used to call him Taloxin,
Nightblood said. Taloxin, Vivenna said, amused. Nightblood, that's one of the five scholars. She trailed off. He lived over 300 years ago, she finally said.
Biochroma can keep a man alive a long time,
Vasher said, sighing and opening his eyes. She didn't argue.
They used to call him other things, too, Nightblood said.
If you're really one of them, Vivenna said, then you'll know how to stop the lifeless.
Sure, Vasher said wryly. With other lifeless.
That's it?
The easiest. Barring that, we can chase them down and grab them one at a time, then break them and replace their command phrases. But even if you had the eighth heightening to let you break commands instinctively, changing so many would take weeks.
He shook his head.
You could have an army fight them, but they are our army. The Halandrin forces aren't large enough to fight the lifeless on their own, and they wouldn't be able to get to Idris with any semblance of speed. The lifeless will beat them by days. Lifeless don't sleep, don't eat, and can march tirelessly.
Ichor alcohol, Vivenna said. They'll run out.
It's not like food, Vivenna. It's like blood. They need a new supply if they get cut and drained, or if it gets corrupted. A few will probably stop working without maintenance, but only a small number.
She fell silent. Well, then, we awaken an army of our own to fight them. He smiled wanly. He felt so lightheaded. He'd bound his wounds, the bad ones, anyway, but he wouldn't be doing more fighting any time soon. Vivenna didn't look much better, with that bloody stain on her shoulder.
Awaken an army of our own, he said. First, where would you get the breath? I used all of yours. Even if we find my clothing, which still has some in it, we'll only have a couple hundred. It takes one per lifeless. We're severely overmatched.
The God King, she said.
Can't use his breath, Vasher said. The man's tongue was removed when he was a child.
And you can't get it out of him somehow? Vasher shrugged.
The tenth heightening allows a man to command mentally, without speaking, but it can take months of training to learn how to do that, even if you have someone to teach you. I think his priests must know how, so they can transfer that wealth of breath from one king to another. But I doubt they've trained him yet. One of their duties is to keep him from using his breaths in the first place.
He's still our best option, Vivenna said.
Oh? And you'll use his power how? Make lifeless? Are you forgetting that we'll need to find 40,000 bodies?
She sighed, resting back against the wall. Vasher? Nightblood asked in his mind. Didn't you leave an army behind here last time? He didn't reply. Vivenna opened her eyes, however. Apparently, Nightblood had decided to include her in all of his thoughts now. What is this? She asked.
Nothing,
Vasher said. No, it's not, Nightblood said. I remember. You talked to that priest, told him to take care of your breath for you, should you need it again, and you gave him your army. It stopped moving. You called it a gift for the city. Don't you remember? It was just yesterday.
Yesterday?
Vivenna asked. When the Many War stopped, Nightblood said. When was that?
He doesn't understand time,
Vasher said.
Don't listen to him.
No. Vivenna said, studying him. He knows something. She thought for a moment, then her eyes opened wide. Kalad's army, she said, pointing at him. His phantoms. You know where they are. He hesitated, then nodded reluctantly. Where?
Here. In the city.
We have to use them. He eyed her.
You're asking me to give Halandrin a tool, Vivenna. A terrible tool. Something worse than what they have now.
And if that army of theirs slaughters my people? Vivenna asked. Could what you're talking about give them more power than that?
Yes.
She fell silent. Do it anyway, she said. He glanced at her. Please, Vasher. He closed his eyes again, remembering the destruction he had caused, the wars that had started, all because of the things he had learned to create.
You would give your enemies such power.
They're not my enemies, she said, even if I hate them. He regarded her for a moment, then finally stood.
Let's find the God King. If he even still lives, then we shall see.
My lord and lady, said the priest, bowing with his face down before them, we heard rumors of a plot to attack the palace. That's why we locked you away. We wanted to protect you. Ciri looked at the man, then glanced at Sesebron. The God King rubbed his chin in thought. They both recognized this man as one of his actual priests, rather than an impostor. They'd only been able to determine that with certainty for a handful of them. They imprisoned the others, sending for the city guard to come in and start cleaning up the wreckage of the palace. The breeze blew Ciri's hair, red, to show her displeasure, as they stood atop the palace.
There, my lord,
a guard said, pointing. Sesebron turned, walking over to the edge of the palace. Most of his entourage of twisting cloths were no longer streaming about him, but they waited on his will in a pile on the rooftop. Ciri joined him at the side of the palace, and in the distance she could make out a smudge and what looked like smoke.
The lifeless army, the guard said. Our scouts have confirmed that it's marching toward Idris. Almost everyone in the city saw it pass out through the gates.
That smoke? Ciri asked.
Dust of its passing, my lady, the guard said. That's a lot of soldiers.
She looked up at Sesebron. He frowned.
I could stop them.
His voice was stronger than she had expected it to be. Deeper.
My lord? The guard asked. With this much breath, Sesebron said, I could charge them. Use these cloths to tie them up.
My lord, the guard said hesitantly.
There are 40,000 of them. They would cut at the cloth, overwhelm you.
Sesebron seemed resolute.
I have to try.
No, Ciri said, laying a hand on his chest.
Your people.
We'll send messengers, she said, explaining our regret. My people can withdraw, ambush the lifeless. We can send troops to help.
We don't have many, he said, and they won't get there very quickly. Could your people really get away?
No, she thought, heart wrenching. You don't know that, though, and you're innocent enough to believe they can escape. Her people might survive as a whole, but many would die. Sesebron getting himself killed fighting the creatures wouldn't be of much use, however. He had amazing power, but fighting so many lifeless was well beyond the scope of whatever he could do. He saw the look in her face, and surprisingly, he read it well.
You don't believe that they can get away, he said. You're just trying to protect me.
Surprising how well he understands me already.
My lord,
a voice said from behind. Sesebron turned, looking across the top of the palace. They'd come to the top partially to get a look at the lifeless, but also because both Ciri and Sesebron were tired of being closed in tight quarters. They wanted to be in the open, where it would be harder to sneak up on them. A guard came out of the stairwell, then walked over, hand on sword. He bowed.
My lord, there's someone here to see you. I don't want to see anyone, Sesebron said. Who are they?
Amazing how well he can speak, she thought, never having had a tongue. What did Lightsong's breath do? It healed more than his body. It gave him the capacity to use the regrown tongue.
My lord,
the guard said.
The visitor. She has the royal locks.
What? Ciri asked with surprise.
The guard turned, and, shockingly, Vivenna stepped up onto the roof of the palace. Or Ciri thought it was Vivenna. She wore trousers and a tunic, with a sword tied at her waist, and she appeared to have a bloody wound on one shoulder. She saw Ciri and smiled, her hair turning yellow with joy.
Vivenna's hair changing? Ciri thought. It can't be her.
But it was. The woman laughed, dashing across the top of the roof. Some guards stopped her, but Ciri waved for them to let the woman pass. She ran over, embracing Ciri.
Vivenna?
The woman smiled ruefully. Yes, mostly, she said. She glanced at Sesebron.
I'm sorry, Vivenna said quietly. I came to the city to try rescuing you.
That was very kind of you, Ciri said. But I don't need rescuing. Vivenna frowned more deeply.
And who is this, Ciri?
Sesebron asked.
My eldest sister.
Ah,
Sesebron said, bowing his head cordially.
Ciri has told me much about you, Princess Vivenna. I wish we could have met under better circumstances.
Vivenna stared at the man with shock.
He's not really as bad as they say, Ciri said, smiling. Most of the time.
That is sarcasm, Sesebron said. She is quite fond of it.
Vivenna turned from the God King. Our homeland is under attack.
I know, Ciri said. We're working on that. I'm preparing messengers to send to Father.
I have a better way, Vivenna said, but you'll have to trust me.
Of course, Ciri said.
I have a friend who needs to speak with the God King, Vivenna said, where he can't be overheard by guards.
Ciri hesitated.
Silly, she thought. This is Vivenna. I can trust her.
She'd thought she could trust Bluefingers, too. Vivenna regarded her with a curious expression.
If this can help save Idris,
Sesebron said,
then I will do it. Who is this person?
Moments later, Vivenna stood quietly on the roof of the palace with the God King of Halandrin. Ciri stood a short walk away, watching the lifeless churn dust in the distance. All of them waited, while the soldiers searched Vasher for weapons. He stood with arms upraised on the other side of the rooftop, surrounded by suspicious guards. He had wisely left Nightblood below and didn't have any other weapons on him. He didn't even have any breath.
Your sister is an amazing woman, the God King said.
Vivenna glanced at him. This was the man she was to have married, the terrible creature that she was supposed to have given herself to. She'd never expected to end up like this, pleasantly chatting with him. She'd also never expected that she'd like him. It was a quick judgment. She'd gotten over chastising herself for making those, though she had learned to leave them open for revision. She saw kindness in his fondness for Ciri. How had a man like this ended up as God King of terrible Halandrin?
Yes, she said. She is. I love her, Sesebron said. I would have you know this.
Slowly, Vivenna nodded, glancing over at Ciri. She's changed so much, Vivenna thought. When did she become so regal, with that commanding bearing and ability to keep her hair black? Her little sister, no longer quite as little, seemed to wear the expensive dress well. It fit her. Odd. On the other end of the rooftop,
The guards took Vasher behind a screen to change. They obviously wanted to be certain none of his clothing was awakened. He left a few moments later, wearing a wrap around his waist, but nothing else. His chest was cut and bruised, and Vivenna thought it shameful that he should be forced to undergo such humiliation. He suffered it, walking across the rooftop with an escort. As he did, Ciri walked back, eyes watching him keenly. Vivenna had spoken with her sister briefly, but could already tell that Ciri no longer took pride in being unimportant. Changed, indeed. Vasher arrived, and Sisebron dismissed the guards. Behind him, the jungles extended to the north toward Idris. Vasher glanced at Vivenna, and she thought he might tell her to go. However, he finally just turned away from her, looking resigned.
"Who are you?"
Sisebron asked.
"The one responsible for you getting your tongue cut out,"
Vasher said. Sisebron raised an eyebrow. Vasher closed his eyes. He didn't speak, didn't use his breath or make a command. Yet, suddenly, he started to glow. Not as a lantern would glow, not as the sun glowed, but with an aura that made colors brighter. Vivenna started as Vasher increased in size. He opened his eyes and adjusted the wrap at his waist, making room for his growth. His chest became more firm, the muscles bulging, and the scruffy beard on his face retreated, leaving him clean-shaven. His hair turned golden. He still bore the cuts on his body, but they seemed inconsequential. He seemed divine. The God King watched with interest. He was now faced by a fellow god, a man of his own stature.
"I don't care if you believe me or not,"
Vasher said, his voice sounding more noble.
"But I will have you know that I left something here, long ago. A wealth of power that I promised to one day recover. I gave instructions for its care, and a charge that it should not be used. The priests, apparently, took this to heart."
Sisebron, surprisingly, dropped to one knee.
"My lord, where have you been?"
"Paying for what I've done,"
Vasher said,
"or trying to. That is unimportant. Stand."
What is going on? Vivenna thought. Ciri looked equally confused, and the sisters shared a look. Sisebron stood, though he kept his posture reverent.
"You have a group of rogue lifeless,"
Vasher said.
"You've lost control of them."
"I'm sorry, my lord,"
the God King said. Vasher regarded him, then he glanced at Vivenna. She nodded her head. "I trust him."
"It's not about trust,"
Vasher said, turning back to Sisebron.
"Either way, I am going to give you something."
"What?"
"My army,"
Vasher said. Sisebron frowned.
"But, my lord, our lifeless just marched away to attack Idris."
"No," Vasher said, "not that army. I'm going to give you the one I left behind 300 years ago. The people call them Kalad's Phantoms. They are the force by which I made Halandrin stop its war."
"Stop the many war, my lord?" Sisebron said. "You did that by negotiation."
Vasher snorted.
"You don't know much about war, do you?"
The God King paused, then shook his head.
"No."
"Well, learn,"
Vasher said,
"because I charge you with command of my army. Use it to protect, not attack. Only use it in an emergency."
The God King nodded, dumbly. Vasher glanced at him, then sighed.
My sin be hidden.
What?
Sesebron asked.
It's a command phrase,
Vasher said.
The one you can use to give new orders to the Dedenner statues I left in your city.
But my lord, Sesebron said, stone cannot be awakened.
The stone hasn't been awakened,
Vasher said.
There are human bones in those statues. They are lifeless.
Human bones. Vivenna felt a chill. He'd told her that bones were usually a bad choice to awaken, because it was hard to keep them in the shape of a man during the awakening process. But what if those bones were encased in stone? Stone that held its shape. Stone that would protect them from harm, make them nearly impossible to hurt or break. Awakened objects could be so much stronger than human muscles. If a lifeless could be created from bones, made strong enough to move a rock body around it, you'd have soldiers unlike any that had ever existed. Colors, she thought.
There are some 1,000 original Dedenner in the city,
Vasher said,
and most of them should still function, even still. I created them to last.
But they have no ichor alcohol, Vivenna said. They don't even have veins. Vasher looked at her. It was him. The same look to the face, the same expressions. He hadn't changed shape to look like someone else. He just looked like a returned version of himself. What was going on?
We didn't always have ichor alcohol,
Vasher said.
It makes the awakening easier and cheaper. But it isn't the only way. And in the minds of many, I believe it has become a crutch.
He glanced at the God King again.
You should be able to imprint them quickly with a new security phrase, then order them out to stop the other army. I think you'll find those phantoms of mine to be very effective. Weapons are virtually useless against stone.
Sesebron nodded again.
They are your responsibility now,
Vasher said, turning away.
Do better with them than I did.
Epilogue. The next day, an army of 1,000 stone soldiers charged from the gates of the city, running down the highway after the lifeless who had left the day before. Vivenna stood outside the city, leaning against the wall, watching them go. How often did I stand under the gaze of those Dedenner, she thought, never knowing they were alive, just waiting to be commanded again. Everyone said that Peacegiver had left the statues behind as a gift to the people, a symbol to remind them not to go to war. She'd always found it strange. A bunch of statues of soldiers, a gift to remind the people that war was terrible. And yet, they were a gift. The gift that had ended the many war. She turned toward Vasher. He, too, leaned against the city wall, night blood in one hand. His body had reverted to its mortal form, scraggly hair and all. What was that first thing you taught me about awakening? She asked.
That we don't know much,
he asked.
That there are hundreds, perhaps thousands of commands that we haven't discovered yet.
That's the one, she said, turning to watch the awakened statues charge into the distance. I think you were right.
You think?
She smiled. Will they really be able to stop the other army?
Probably,
Vasher said, shrugging.
They'll be fast enough to catch up. The flesh lifeless won't be able to march as quickly as the ones with stone feet. I've seen those things fight before. They're really tough to beat.
She nodded. So my people will be safe.
Unless that God King decides to use the lifeless statues to conquer them.
She snorted. Has anyone ever told you that you're a grump, Vasher?
Finally, Nightblood said, someone agrees with me.
Vasher scowled.
I'm not a grump, he said. I'm just bad with words.
She smiled.
Well, that's it then, he said, picking up his pack. See you around.
With that, he began to walk along the path away from the city. Vivenna walked up next to him.
What are you doing?
He asked. Going with you, she said.
You're a princess, he said. Stay with that girl who rules Halindrin. Or go back to Idris and be proclaimed as the heroine who saved them. Either way will give you a happy life.
No, she said. I don't think so. Even if my father did take me back, I doubt that I'll ever be able to live a happy life in either a plush palace or a quiet town.
You'll think differently after a little time on the road. It's a difficult life.
I know, she said. But, well, everything I've been, everything I was trained to do, has been a lie wrapped in hatred. I don't want to go back to it. I'm not that person. I don't want to be.
Who are you, then?
I don't know, she said, nodding toward the horizon. But I think I'll find the answer out there. They walked for another short time.
Your family will worry about you,
Vasher said. They'll get over it, she replied. Finally, he just shrugged.
All right. I don't really care.
She smiled. It's true, she thought. I don't want to go back. Princess Vivenna was dead. She died on the streets of Teteller. Vivenna the Awakener had no desire to bring her back. So, she asked as they walked along the jungle road, I can't figure it out. Which one are you? Kalad, who started the war? Or Peacegiver, who ended it? He didn't answer immediately.
It's odd, he finally said, what history does to a man. I guess people couldn't understand why I suddenly changed, why I stopped fighting, and why I brought the phantoms back to seize control of my own kingdom. So they decided I must have been two people. A man can get confused about his identity when things like that happen.
She grunted in assent. You're still returned, though.
Of course I am, he said.
Where did you get the breath? She asked. The one a week you need to survive.
I carry them with me, on top of the one that makes me returned. In a lot of ways, returned aren't quite what people think they are. They don't automatically have hundreds or thousands of breath.
But
they're of the fifth heightening, Vasher said, interrupting her. But they don't get there by the number of breaths, but by the quality. Returned have a single, powerful breath, one that takes them all the way to the fifth heightening. It's a divine breath, you might say. But their body feeds on breath like
the sword. Vasher nodded.
Nightblood only needs it when he's drawn. Returned feed off their breath once a week, so if you don't give them one, they essentially eat themselves, devouring their one single breath, killing them. However, if you give them extra breath, on top of their single divine one, they'll feed off those each week.
So the Halindrin gods could be fed more than one, Vivenna said. They could have a stock of breaths, a buffer to keep them alive if one couldn't be provided. Vasher nodded.
Wouldn't make them as dependent on their religion to care for them, though.
That's a cynical way of looking at it. He shrugged. So you're going to burn up a breath every week she said. Reducing our stock. He nodded.
I used to have thousands of breath. I ate all of those.
Thousands? But it would take you years and years to... She trailed off. He'd been alive for over 300 years. If he absorbed 50 breaths a year, that was thousands of breaths. You're an expensive guy to keep around, she noted. How do you keep yourself from looking like a returned? And why don't you die when you give away your breaths?
Those are my secrets, he said, not looking at her. Though you should have figured out that returned can change their forms.
She raised an eyebrow.
You've got returned blood in you, he said. The royal line. Where do you think that ability to change your hair color comes from?
Does that mean I can change more than just my hair?
Maybe, he said. Takes time to learn. Go stroll around the Halandrin Court of Gods sometime, though. You'll find that the gods look exactly as they think they should. The old ones look old, the heroic ones become strong, the ones who think a beautiful goddess should be well-endowed become unnaturally voluptuous. It's all about how they perceive themselves.
And this is how you perceive yourself, Vasher? She thought, curious. As the scraggly man, rough and unkempt? She said nothing of that. She just walked on, her life sense letting her feel the jungle around them. They'd recovered Vasher's cloak, shirt, and trousers, the ones that Denth had originally taken from him. There had been enough breath in those to split between the two of them and get them each to the second tightening. It wasn't as much as she was used to, but it was a fair bit better than nothing. So where are we going, anyway?
Ever heard of Cuth and Huth?
He asked. Sure, she said. They were your main rivals in the Many War.
Somebody's trying to restore them, he said. A tyrant of some kind. He's apparently recruited an old friend of mine.
Another one? She asked. He shrugged.
There were 5 of us. Me, Denth, Shashara, Arsteel, and Yesteel. It looks like Yesteel has resurfaced, finally.
He's related to Arsteel? Vivenna guessed.
Brothers.
Great.
I know. He's the one who originally figured out how to make ichor alcohol. I heard rumors that he got a new form of it. More potent.
Even better. They walked in silence for a time longer. I'm bored, Nightblood said. Pay attention to me. Why doesn't anyone ever talk to me?
Because you're annoying,
Vasher snapped. The sword huffed. What's your real name? Vivenna finally asked.
My real name?
Vasher asked. Yes, she said. Everyone calls you things. Peacegiver, Kalad, Vasher, Taloxin. Is that last one your real name? The name of the scholar? He shook his head.
No.
Well, what is it then?
I don't know, he said. I can't remember the time before I returned.
Oh, she said.
When I came back, however, I did get a name,
he finally said.
The Cult of Returned, those who eventually founded the Halandrin Iridescent Tones, found me and kept me alive with breaths. They gave me a name. I didn't like it much. Didn't seem to fit me.
Well, she asked, what was it?
Warbreaker the Peaceful,
he finally admitted. She raised an eyebrow.
What I can't figure out, he said, is whether that was truly prophetic, or if I'm just trying to live up to it.
Does it matter? She asked. He walked for a time in silence.
No,
he finally said.
No, I guess it doesn't. I just wish I knew if there is really something spiritual about the returns, or if it's all just cosmic happenstance.
Probably not for us to know.
Probably,
he agreed. Silence. Should have called you Wart Lover the Ugly, she finally said.
Very mature,
he replied.
You really think those sorts of comments are proper for a princess?
She smiled broadly.
I don't care, she said. And I never have to again.
Ars Arcanum. Note 1. Reaching above the sixth heightening is incredibly rare, and therefore few people understand the powers of the seventh heightening and above. Very little research has been done. The only known people ever to reach the eighth heightening and above are the Halandrin God Kings. Note 2. Returned appear to achieve the fifth heightening by virtue of their breath. It is theorized that they do not actually receive 2,000 breaths when they return, but instead receive a single powerful breath, which brings with it the powers of the first five heightenings. Note 3. The numbers given in the table of the heightenings are only estimates, as very little is known about the upper heightenings. Indeed, even for the lower levels, fewer or more breaths may be required to achieve a given heightening, depending on circumstances and the strength of the breath. Note 4. Each additional breath grants some things, no matter which heightening an awakener has achieved. The more breath one has, the more resistance to disease and aging a person is. The easier it is for them to distinguish colors, the more naturally they can learn to awaken, and the stronger their life sense becomes. Heightening powers. Aura recognition. Approximately 50 breaths needed. The first heightening grants a person the ability to see the breath auras of others instinctively. This allows them to judge roughly how many breaths the person contains and the general health of that breath. Persons without this heightening have a much more difficult time judging auras directly, and must rely instead on how deeply the colors around a person change when they enter the aura. Without at least the first heightening, it is impossible for the naked eye to notice an awakener who has fewer than about 30 breaths. Perfect pitch. Approximately 200 breaths needed. The second heightening grants perfect pitch to those who achieve it. Perfect color recognition. Approximately 600 breaths needed. While each gained breath leads a person to greater appreciation of colors, it isn't until one reaches the third heightening that one can instantly and instinctively determine exact shades of colors and their hue harmonics. Perfect life sense. Approximately 1,000 breaths needed. At the fourth heightening, an awakener's life sense achieves its maximum strength. Agelessness. Approximately 2,000 breaths needed. At the fifth heightening, an awakener's resistance to aging and disease reaches its maximum strength. These persons are immune to most toxins, including the effects of alcohol and most physical ailments, such as headaches, diseases, and organ failure. The person no longer ages and becomes functionally immortal. Instinctive awakening. Approximately 3,500 breaths needed. All persons of the sixth heightening and above immediately understand and can use basic awakening commands without training or practice. More difficult commands are easier for them to master and to discover. Breath recognition. Approximately 5,000 breaths needed. Those few persons who have reached the seventh heightening gain the ability to recognize the auras of objects and can tell when something has been invested with breath via awakening. Command breaking. Approximately 10,000 breaths needed. Any persons of the 8th heightening or more gain the ability to override commands in other invested objects, including lifeless. This requires concentration and leaves the awakener exhausted. Greater awakening. Approximately 20,000 breaths needed. Persons of the 9th heightening are reportedly able to awaken stone and steel, though doing so requires large investitures of breath and specialized commands. This ability has not been studied or confirmed. Also, audible command. Persons of the 9th heightening also gain the ability to awaken objects that they are not physically touching, but that are within the sound of their voice. Color distortion. Approximately 50,000 breaths needed. At the 10th heightening, an awakener gains the natural and intrinsic ability to bend light around white objects, creating colors from them as if from a prism. Also, perfect invocation. Awakeners of the 10th heightening can draw more color from the objects they use to fuel their art. This leaves objects drained to white rather than gray. And finally, there are rumors of other powers granted by the 10th heightening that are not understood or have not been made known by those who have achieved it. The End. This is Elisa Bresnahan. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Warbreaker by Brandon Sanderson. Recorded Books offers a wide selection of bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. So look for us at your public library or on download sites online. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader. It's funny. Vasher thought, how many things begin with my getting thrown into prison? The guards laughed to one another, slamming the cell door shut with a clang. Vasher stood and dusted himself off, rolling his shoulder and wincing. While the bottom half of his cell door was solid wood, the top half was barred, and he could see the three guards open his large duffel and rifle through his possessions. One of them noticed him watching. The guard was an oversized beast of a man with a shaved head and a dirty uniform that barely retained the bright yellow and blue coloring of the Teteller City Guard. Bright colors, Vasher thought. I'll have to get used to those again. In any other nation, the vibrant blues and yellows would have been ridiculous on soldiers. This, however, was Halandrin, land of returned gods, lifeless servants, biochromatic research, and, of course, color. The large guard sauntered up to the cell door, leaving his friends to amuse themselves with Vasher's belongings. "They say you're pretty tough," the man said, sizing up Vasher. Vasher didn't respond. "The bartender says you beat down some 20 men in the brawl." The guard rubbed his chin. "You don't look that tough to me. Either way, you should have known better than to strike a priest. The others, they'll spend a night locked up. You, though, you'll hang. Colorless fool." Vasher turned away. His cell was functional, if unoriginal. A thin slit at the top of one wall let in light. The stone walls dripped with water and moss, and a pile of dirty straw decomposed in the corner. "You ignoring me?" the guard asked, stepping closer to the door. The colors of his uniform brightened, as if he'd stepped into a stronger light. The change was slight. Vasher didn't have much breath remaining, and so his aura didn't do much to the colors around him. The guard didn't notice the change in color, just as he hadn't noticed back in the bar, when he and his buddies had picked Vasher up off the floor and thrown him in their cart. Of course, the change was so slight to the unaided eye that it would have been nearly impossible to pick out. "Here, now," said one of the men looking through Vasher's duffel. "What's this?" Vasher had always found it interesting that the men who watched dungeons tended to be as bad as, or worse than, the men they guarded. Perhaps that was deliberate. Society didn't seem to care if such men were outside the cells or in them, so long as they were kept away from more honest men. Assuming that such a thing existed,